Green, set.
Left to five.
Right middle. Right middle.
Here we go. Here we go.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, I was just going to tell you up front, I've already eaten all my barbecue.
I didn't even have any.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 284.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, as well as by people like you, our listeners, on Patreon. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, it's not the big one. It's the little one. It's the SEC East. It's the barbecue preview. It's what we're known for more than anything else. It's our big season preview episode, part one, where we look at the SEC East while eating barbecue. Now, John and I have confided already before we got started tonight a certain little secret, which is this will be a virtual barbecue episode, but because it's the SEC East, nobody's going to care. John's already had his barbecue. I had some lovely pork earlier, but we are now having the virtual barbecue, because for the East, it doesn't take science. It doesn't even take the alchemy of the barbecue. I think it's just pretty laid right out, right? I mean, we can carry this off pretty well, I think, without actually eating barbecue on there. Now, of course, in 2 weeks when we do the SEC West and the Auburn preview, we got to have the fresh barbecue right there in front of us. You agree?
I'm with that.
All right, we'll have it here in 2 weeks. All right, so the virtual barbecue tonight. First off, we just had the first scrimmage, I believe, today, and I've been listening to Gus and various people talking about it. What are you thinking right now? Have you heard anything about the scrimmage? Because I heard enough to know that there really wasn't that much to hear. Or at least
No, there wasn't that much to hear. They held a number of key players were held out. Kerryon and Cam Petway were held out. Marvin Davidson was held out. Mm-hmm. And the first team defense played very well, especially against the run. Quarterbacks didn't do anything spectacular. Maybe Sean White looked better. No big injuries, which is always an important one.
That's number one for me right now.
That's always number one in fall. And that's, to me, a really smart reason not to play Kerryon or Petway. We know what they can do.
Yeah,
playing them against the defense isn't going to help the defense significantly get better, I don't think. It's better to, in running backs only have so many hits in their bodies. It's better to save it for the regular season.
Well, plus the other running backs need the work. They need to be evaluating Martin and Malik Miller and the other guys back there, the new guy and all that. So
yeah,
Devin Grin and Barrett. So Devin Barrett and Sherritt. Hopefully not on the field. He won't share it.
No.
Fumble it away. That would be bad. That would not be a good thing. Yeah, that was kind of my impression too, is that they were very vanilla. They were very basic. The run defense was probably the unit that did the most. You know, I have been hearing good things the last few days from practice about Sal Canella, the tight end mm-hmm. slash now slot receiver. Is he just like a big, lanky guy that can go up and grab the ball out of the air over the defense or something? Or what is he doing beyond that?
Again, the first few days of practice, they were playing without pads. So there was basically like a passing drill and those kind of things.
Right.
And he is a big guy and a good athlete. And he was really good at using his body to box people out and go up and get the ball. And I think he made an impression in those early practices. He's not practicing with the tight ends. He's practicing with the receivers. And, I like the idea of him as being a big receiver that can go out and make some plays in the red zone or in key third downs and stuff. So
yeah. Well, let's see. What kind of news do we have coming out? Obviously, Auburn's going to have more scrimmages to come, and we've still got, you know, several more weeks before the season. But it is good to see they're out there throwing it around. And oh, by the way, the other really raving report I've been hearing is that our third string quarterback, the other Malik
Willis,
he's been doing really well, even better than they thought, than they expected.
Yes, I mean, I feel really good about him. I mean, regardless of what happens with recruiting and the current two, you know, quarterbacks ahead of him on the roster, I feel like Malik Willis is a keeper and that he could be a solid starter for Auburn one day. And I think, you know, in a worst case scenario, he could come in and play this year and not be a disaster. So yeah. I feel pretty good about him.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that. But yeah, everything I've heard about him is not that he's done anything bad. It's just been that he's, you know, he's a true freshman, so he's just learning what to do. But the things he's learned to do, he does very well. So that's very promising. That just means, you know, give him some more practice, some more time, and he'll be, you know, right on in there. So that's very, very good. I know that we did lose a recruit we were looking for, a running back signed with committed to Florida.
Yes. Well, and then the big recruit news that was the Carlito Gonzalez.
Yeah.
You know, the safety signee who we actually thought was going to, you know, sign and enroll this and be a practice right now, did not make the grades to get into Auburn. And they thought he was going to go to JUCO and maybe come back, but he did make the grades to get into Memphis. And so now he's signed to Memphis and he's playing for them.
I just got to say, Memphis, dang. What? Where is your bar set, Memphis? I just...
It's below the SEC Auburn bar for incoming recruits. So.
All right, well, apparently. Let's see.
I mean, the big thing is that they're doing another scrimmage next Saturday, right. And there was no decision in the quarterback thing. That's really the headline, I guess.
Well, wow. They're going to go through the motions. They're not going to spend 6 months saying, oh, Sean White will have every opportunity to win it. Sean White will have every opportunity to win it. They go out there for 2 hours. Well, that was it.
I mean, opportunity's over.
It's over. I mean, come on. That would be cruel. That would be wrong. So, you know, unless Stidham went out there and did like a the Giants, Phil Simms in the Super Bowl, you know, going like 19 for 19 or something. I mean, short of that, you just can't imagine any scenario where they would do one scrimmage and say, it's over, it's all done. We, you know, so, I mean, it would make them look ridiculous the last several months that they've sworn up and down that there was no favorite, you know. So I'm sure after maybe one or two more scrimmages, we will know, as long as Stidham doesn't do anything egregiously bad. I mean, it's, you know, it kind of reminds me of the 2010 practices where the quarterback that looked the worst of all of them was Cam, but yet he didn't look so bad to rule himself out. You know what I mean? He was not horrible. He was unhorrible enough that you figure his upside, you know what I'm saying, was better than the other guys, you know, playing at their best. So Cam at his worst was not disqualifying, and it's, you know, Stidham out there.
I don't think the gap is quite that large here, but, you know, the assumption is that Stidham is going to win. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the worst kept secret, you know, since I don't know when. Any other Auburn related news before we get our last couple of items and then get into the East?
No, I'm going to have a lot of stuff to say about Auburn when we do the actual preview. I think Jamel Dean has played well this fall. That's another guy that we haven't seen playing a game, but he got injured last fall during preseason camp and has looked really good this fall. And so I think there's a lot of expectations for him. So that's somebody else to keep your eye out for, you know, when we hear stuff about practice.
His nickname needs to be Jimmy, so he can be Jamel Jimmy Dean. I'll put a sound quote in from Diamonds Are Forever. I'll have him saying, you know, Baja California. That's a promise. Well, let's see. Over the weekend, we came back from our visit that people knew about. We mentioned on here that our vacation that went down to Florida. And on the way back up from Florida, we went through Atlanta briefly, and we stopped at the College Football Hall of Fame. We were trying to think what we could do in Atlanta just, you know, in like an hour on the way back through there without taking up our travel time. We thought, let's run by there. You haven't been, have you?
No.
That was my first time there. It's been there only a couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a pretty neat deal. They've got a whole big facility all set up down. It's kind of next to the World Congress Center, down near the Georgia Dome, that area of town. And it's basically on three levels. It's very modern looking interior, very open interior. On the bottom level, part of it is like a indoor practice field where kids can throw the ball around, you know, and do drills and stuff. And that's kind of completely separate from the other half of the bottom. So that when you buy your passes, they actually give you a lanyard with a clip-on badge, like you're going to a convention or something, but it's kind of like a media credentials, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Kids get the red shirt badge, everybody else gets the fan badge. And when you go in with that little badge, it's got an RF transmitter in it. And so the first thing you do is register what school you like best. And so every time you walk up to – they've got big video screens everywhere. The whole thing is just walls of video screens everywhere. And every time you walk up to one, it reads your little transmitter and it puts up your school's logo and pictures and stuff. So like if I walked up to the wall – it popped up the AU a bunch of times, and it popped up Aubie, you know, and Bo Jackson running, and Pat Sullivan and Cam and stuff like that. So that's really neat, because what it does is it personalizes everybody's experience based on your, you know, your school. And they've got everybody. I mean, they've got, you know, when you first go in, they got that famous wall of helmets. They've got every helmet all the way down through Division III. And when you first come in and you put it in, the helmet lights up with a light inside so you can find it. And then it follows you, you know, that your school follows you around thanks to your lanyard, your badge. So the first floor is a bunch of stuff where you can walk around and see, you know, you can do things like you can do radio play-by-play, or you can do a game day set experience where you're sitting there in front of a green screen and they superimpose Chris Fowler and Desmond Howard and everything on there so you can pick a play. And I did the... You know, Maddie and I did the kick six. That was pretty fun.
Nice.
And we did that on the play-by-play. Yeah, they do one that lets you do like Rod Bramblett do the play-by-play, and one lets you pick the winner of the Iron Bowl or whatever. So what's neat about it, again, is it has all the different teams, but it's customized, you know, to your thing. Now, if your school had never done anything and didn't have hardly any members of the Hall of Fame, you're not going to have quite the same experience as if you're like an Auburn fan, you know, or Alabama or Texas or USC or something, but they do a good job of tailoring it electronically to who, you know, whatever you're interested in. And then, you know, the second floor is some more interactive exhibits and stuff. And on the top floor is the Hall of Fame. And here's what's cool. They have these rotating monitors, and you can stand there, and as you turn the monitor and point them at different schools, this monitor shows all this stuff about each of their Hall of Fame inductees, and you can tap on them to get more stuff on them. So, like, if you point it at Auburn, it shows Bo, it shows Shug Jordan, it shows Pat Dye, you know, whatever, and Tracy Rocker, and you can tap on each one of them to get, like, a whole biography and photos and stuff like that. So that's pretty cool. So, and then they got a gift shop, you know. So all in all, I thought it was pretty cool. It's like around $20 for an adult to get in, like $10 for a child, something like that. So, you know, it was like $75 for us three to go in. So it was pretty neat. And have a Chick-fil-A in there that the kids loved. So it was pretty cool. I recommend it.
Nice.
I mean, you're not going to spend more than a couple hours in there, but it's pretty neat. So that's the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention is I have a Reynolds Wolf update.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
Yes, Thundersnow was... In an article on AL.com today, he was texting me that they had done an article, which was cool. I went and checked it out, and they have an article talking to him about being an Auburn fan. So it's more of a sports related thing or human interest as opposed to like a news story. And I didn't notice if it was a Jeremy article, Jeremy Henderson, or not. I I can't remember offhand, but it was the kind of thing Jeremy does, you know, where he goes out and finds celebrities and, you know, people in the media and stuff that have a connection to Auburn and talks about them, you know. And it just was talking about how Reynolds became an Auburn fan and what he does on the air, you know, just to be an Auburn guy. Like he'll do occasional look-ins to Toomer's Corner in his morning show, you know. And he told that story we've recounted before about how he, you know, his family had horses when he was little, and it was an Auburn veterinarian team that saved his horse. And he said something to the effect of, you know, the school that saves your horse's life gets a lot of your, you know, your loyalty suddenly. So I just think it's a really neat story. So check that out. It's on AL.com, I think, today. Neat little human interest thing about Reynolds and his love for the Tigers. So that's pretty cool. Any other news?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, before we roll into the East, I got to quickly thank our patrons on Patreon and ask those of you out there listening who enjoy our show to please become a member of the White Rocket team and the AU Wishbone family and help us stay on the air. Our patrons who help us so far, and the list is getting longer, which is what we need. We always start with good old Nicholas Cottrell, who I almost got to see on my trip. I almost got to see him, but it didn't work out. We had a strange set of circumstances happen, and I didn't get to say hello to him. And Nicholas, I really hate that. I wanted to see you. We were exchanging texts through part of the day, but it just didn't work out. David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Chris Thrash, Wes Atkinson, J.W. Rice, Randall Walker, and Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. Of course, WeHaveDonuts.com, thanks to our offices, has become a sponsor of Brandon's show, which is really cool. But he and WeHaveDonuts.com are also helping out with the AU Wishbone. And so I like to point out that they are old-fashioned donuts made from scratch. You can order them online at wehavedonuts.com, and there are pickup locations on the site. They're at various coffee shops and other places around Birmingham and the state. And there are special delivery deals to Prevail Union in Auburn and coming soon in Montgomery. So that's wehavedonuts.com from good old Phil Amthor, who helps keep our show going. So if you would like to become part of that list and contribute as little as a dollar a month to keep the lights on here in the palatial AU Wishbone White Rocket Studios, just visit patreon.com, patreon.com. You can do a /Van Allen Plexico, or you can just go to patreon.com and search for Van Plexico. Honestly, you could probably go to patreon.com and just search Plexico, P-L-E-X-I-C-O, and surely there are not that many of us on there, so it would probably pop right up. Okay, John, let us get into the SEC East. So, let me find I've turned it on and now I can't turn it off. All right.
Yeah. Man, I think the soundboard has become sitting in and trying to take over the program.
It has become sitting in. I love it. Yes, that's right. All right. So, SEC East, I guess we do them in alphabetical order, but we go through and kind of talk about them a little bit and then give what we think the virtual barbecue is telling us their record will be. Is that correct?
It is correct.
All right. It's been seemingly a year since we did this, so I have to always stop and remember how we do it. Okay, so, and you have some statistics in front of you that are going to help your prediction and your discussion of it be, like, based on something other than just pulling out of your butt like I am.
Hey, can I talk for a minute about what I think is important in these?
I think it would be great if you did that.
Okay. When I look at the, you know, teams in the SEC, the East and the West, there's a few things that I look at to try and figure out how they're going to do going into the next year. I look at returning starters. I look at the production of the returning starters. I look at offensive line starts. So it's like the experience of the offensive linemen as a unit. I look at who their schedule. So who they play out of the West, since the West is much tougher. If you get a tough West schedule, that's much harder. And then who you play non-conference. So how, you know, how tough overall your schedule is, and then, you know, if there's anything else going on. So that's really kind of my methodology. Is I look at, you know, talent coming back, and the experience of that talent coming back, and then and the difficulty of your schedule is the key things for me.
Makes sense. Let me see. Yeah.
And then also the other thing I'll think taking into account is like if you have new coordinators or coaches,
that coaching changes, yeah. Changes at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. All right, let me see. So first up is Florida. Let me give my uneducated opinion on Florida, and then you can fill us in with the information. Let me, and I'll hold off and do the fanfare for the prediction. I think about Florida, and I think about how they play. They do play two tough out of conference teams. They always play Florida State, but they start out with Michigan this year too. They got a fairly tough row to hoe in the in their two Western teams as well. Now, they've had a fairly weak offensive line the last couple of years, which has just been one more of many problems they've had on offense. But that offense, that offensive line is starting to I mean, it's been around a couple of years now, long enough, you know, where, like, you know, for example, Martez Ivy that almost came to Auburn. He was, you know, playing as a rookie because they needed him. But now he's in his, I guess, third year. So something that was a weakness now becomes more of a strength. So I just look at Florida, and I think their defense obviously is going to take a dip, but their offense should be a little bit better. I feel like they've also shuffled their coaches around a little bit. I look at their schedule. Like I say, it's tough. Yeah.
The big thing is they got the transfer quarterback from Notre Dame, Malik Zaire.
Yeah.
Who got called, who got, you know, approved to transfer and immediately eligible. So I think he's going to make a difference. I think he's better than anybody they've had since the guy who got suspended for PEDs.
So. Right, right. So I see a little bit weaker on defense, a little bit stronger on offense. It kind of balances out. They got a good kicker. They got the only other kicker in the SEC that can even rival Daniel Carlson. And if you don't believe it, he went like 21 for 24 last year and was 3 for
rival Daniel Carlson. Bite your tongue.
Well, listen, he went 21 for 24 overall. That's not bad. And he was 3
I don't care if he went 84 for
and he was 3
85
for
85 or whatever. He's not Daniel Carlson.
I didn't say he was. He went 21 for 24 overall and he was 3 for 3. I'm going to finish this sentence. He was 3 for 3 from outside of 50 yards. Now, that is Carlson-like numbers. I'm sorry. It is.
That is good.
And so when you add that in there, and the fact that a couple of years ago they couldn't make a field goal with a howitzer and no rush, and now they got that. So I'm going to say everything else balances out. The kicking gives them a little boost. I see them going about 8-4. But honestly, oh, I forgot to do the –
you're a little rusty with these.
Yeah, I am. It was East. My heart's not in it tonight. We'll put on a whole production in 2 weeks for the West. But no, for Florida, I mean, I feel like 8-4. I just feel like that there's two or three games in a triangle there that are going to decide the East. There's, you know, Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina in some form or fashion, the winners of those games. And they could all eliminate each other in a circular firing squad, you know, but the winner that's going to come out of that is going to be the East winner. The whichever one wins two of those three in that, you know what I'm saying, in that triangle. So So I don't think it's Florida. So 8-4, and they're going to probably end up second or third in the East, though they do have a chance to win it. Break down Florida for us, John.
No, they had a ton of talent they lost on defense the NFL. Then they've recruited well over there, so they got a lot of guys, you know, talented guys back there. But they lost a ton of guys who are, you know, really, really good players for the past few years. I mean, offensively, I think their court problem has been terrible quarterback play, and that should be fixed, you know, a little bit with Zaire. I think they'll be better. But this, like you said, the schedule's brutal. I mean, Michigan's a neutral site game. They have Florida State at home, but that's still really bad. The weird thing is, because of the whole hurricane thing, they get both West teams at home. They get LSU and A&M at home.
That's weird.
So that's a good advantage. But, I mean, that is still tough. You got, you know, Michigan, Florida State, LSU, A&M, and everybody in the East. So, you know, even if they're – I think the defense is going to take a step back. The offense will be a little better. I mean, I agree. I think about 8-4, you know, bet is probably where they're going to be. But that might do it in the East. Overall, I don't think the East is great. I don't see any team leaping way ahead.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the fact that I have two teams playing a little better with an easier schedule, then I would probably have Florida winning the East. But I got two other teams with an easier schedule, easier road to hoe. So, all right, let us move on to Georgia. And I'll throw out my thoughts on Georgia. Georgia, they play at Notre Dame this year. That's just weird. I just don't think of Georgia playing Notre Dame. Of course, we're trying to play Notre Dame. Georgia last year was not as good as you kind of think they were. They were good in spots, you know. And they had that crazy game with Tennessee that was just insane. But against us, they didn't score an offensive touchdown, did they?
No, they should have lost that game. I mean, and they did, you know, the crazy ending, the Tennessee game, they lost to Kentucky, I believe, on the road. So, yeah. Do you know how many SEC wins Georgia had last year?
Four SEC wins?
Yes.
Oh, by the way, here's my stat. Hold on. Oh, do I still have...
Factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
Here's the factoid of the week. Florida, last season, how many offensive touchdowns did Florida score in November? Which is like crunch time in college football. How many touchdowns?
I don't know.
Three in November. Ouch. Yeah. That's less than one a week, probably. But Georgia didn't score any offensive touchdowns against us, and they still won, so we don't really have much room to talk. Because we didn't score.
No.
No, we kicked two field goals, didn't we? It was like 13-6 or some ridiculous thing.
Yep.
All right. So Georgia could be better than – I mean, Georgia, I don't know. I for some reason, I want to keep thinking Georgia was better last year than they were. But honestly, they weren't. So I look at Georgia this year, and I've got them going I've got them going 9-3, and that's purely because I feel like they'll beat – I believe I've got them beating Notre Dame. Let me bring up their schedule right quick. Go ahead and talk for a little bit about Georgia, and then I'm going to come back in and tell you what –
All right. Coming into last year, they had lost everybody in the front seven on defense, and I thought that was going to be a weakness, and it kind of was. And they had the freshman QB last year who was really inconsistent, Eason.
Right. Right.
And everybody just kind of assumes he's going to go from that to great. And I think he'll be better, but I don't think that – I mean, I didn't watch him last year. I think, man, this guy scares the crud out of me. He's going to be the next great thing. But he was a very highly recruited guy. He could be good. I mean, from the West, they play Mississippi State at home, which would be a tough game, and they come to Auburn. And non-conference, they open with Appalachian State. They play at Notre Dame. That game, I believe, will be at the exact same time as Auburn-Clemson.
Oh, man.
And they end the season at Georgia Tech. So, you know, they got to play Florida in the cocktail party in Jacksonville. I think they have to go to Tennessee because the ending of that game was in Georgia last year. The schedule's pretty tough. They do have the quarterback returning. They have 10 guys back on defense. You know, they lost a lot of talent on the offensive line. They do have the two running backs returning. You know, I mean, I thought for sure that Nick Chubb was going to go pro. But the injuries were too much, I guess, and it really hurt his draft rating, so he didn't. So he's back.
Yep.
Which is big for them. I mean, they got him. They got the quarterback. They got that tight end that get Nauta that drove his crazy down the stretch last year. So I don't think they're great. I think they're solid, you know, and better than they were last year. But I think it's still kind of in the 8-4 category.
I went through their schedule, and I mean, a lot of it comes down to how they do against Notre Dame. But I have them beating Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame is one of those teams that can go undefeated and still not be as good as a mid-range SEC team, you know, just depending on who they're playing in the year. If I have it, if they beat Notre Dame, they will go to the cocktail party against Florida 7-0. But I have them losing the next three straight, losing to Florida because Georgia always loses to Florida, losing to South Carolina, and I have them losing at Auburn, Lord willing. And so then they'll beat Kentucky and Georgia Tech to round out the year, and I have them at 9-3 possible SEC East champions, but not for sure. Okay? So you say 8-4?
Yes.
So we got Florida and Georgia at 8-4 there. So do you have either one of them winning the East, or do you have another team with a better record than 8-4 in the East?
No, there's no. I have no team with a better record than 8-4.
Wow. All right. Well, then let's move on to the Kentucky Wildcats. The Kentucky Wildcats. They were apparently getting much better toward the end of last year. They've been kind of there's been two or three teams that have been the dark horse darling of the offseason, right? And Kentucky's been one of them because they finished fairly strong last year. In fact, I'm just going back and looking. They started out 0-2, but they had a stretch in the middle of the season where they won 5 out of 6. They beat New Mexico State, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Missouri. Their only loss was at Alabama. And then they finished pretty strong. They beat Austin Peay and Louisville before losing to Georgia Tech in the Tax Slayer Bowl. So I look at Kentucky in their upcoming season, and they're another one of these teams that could start out pretty well. They're definitely going to start 2-0. I have Kentucky going 7-5. 7-5 this year. They're going to lose to South Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Louisville, and maybe Tennessee or maybe Mississippi State, one of those. How do you see Kentucky this year?
I like Kentucky. They were not good on defense last year. They have a new defensive coordinator. I thought Eddie Graham did a really good job with their offense last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they won 4 SEC games. They get the easiest draw out of the West, I think, because they get the two Mississippi schools.
They get the tour of Mississippi. They went to Olive Garden and ordered the tour of Mississippi.
So they get Ole Miss at home and at Mississippi State, and that's probably a tough game. They'll probably lose that, but you know, the weird one is they start the season at Southern Miss, which is not something you want to do as an SEC team because those people are going to be fired.
They are doing the tour of Mississippi then. If they're going to, they're playing at Southern Miss, at Mississippi State, and they got Ole Miss at home. Wow.
That's, they can pick amazing up like Alcorn or Jackson State to be the right whole thing.
But yeah, they can do like Jerry Glanville used to do, declare themselves Mississippi State champions.
And they're also kind of doing the directional tour because their non-conference schedule includes Southern Miss, Eastern Kentucky, and Eastern Michigan, and the Fighting Southern.
Oh yeah, the Southern Fighting. Oh, I do love the Southern Fighting.
But no, I think they have a lot of talent coming back. They have a really good young running back. They have two quarterbacks who were competing last year, and they have a lot of starters back. So a lot of experience, and I think their schedule is pretty easy for an East team. So I kind of like Kentucky to sneak in there. You know, I'm agreeing with you on the 7-5, but I wouldn't be shocked if they went 8-4 and tied Florida and Georgia for the
the
overall. Yeah.
Wow. So you could we've looked at three SEC East schools so far, and we potentially got three at 8-4. I'm not even sure that's mathematically possible at the end of the day.
Work with me.
Well, and you know what else is we've still got South Carolina and Tennessee to go, which could also do that. So, all right. Well, speaking of which, let's move on. Next up on our alphabetical.
Are you saying tour. I can't pick this for every team?
Every team goes 8-4. It's amazing. Yeah, and every team in the West goes undefeated. How does that happen? That's crazy. You wouldn't think it's possible, but yeah, somehow mathematically, there's an algorithm. Mizzou. The Missouri Tigers, I can't wait to go over and see them in person for the first time. I just can't wait. I'm so excited. So Missouri is a team that has really fallen off the earth. The weird thing is they've always been a team that had a great defense, and particularly a defensive line. But their offense just completely disintegrated, and their defense wasn't very good last year either. They suddenly got a quarterback, right? They've suddenly got a quarterback, and they can pass the ball. That's about all they can do. Should I be worried when Auburn goes to Missouri? Should I be worried about the big upset factor from that team?
Well, I mean, their defense was awful last year, but the guy they hired as a defensive coach, Barry Odom, I think their defense will get better. They returned 10 starters on offense, including this quarterback you were talking about, Drew Locke. They are going to be able to score points. So, I mean, Auburn needs to go into that game and kind of take control with the, you know, running the ball. And I think our defense can hold them down a little bit. But that's a team, you know, kind of like a poor man's Ole Miss offense where they chuck the ball down the field a good bit. And they're going to make some plays and score points against people. The problem was last year they couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave up a gazillion points. So I just look at them and go, I'm not that scared of going to Missouri because I just think they can't stop Auburn at all. And even if they give up some – if Auburn gives up some points to them, you know.
Looking at their schedule, I mean, they start out with Missouri State. They've got Purdue at home. They have to go to Kentucky and Georgia, but they've got Idaho at home. They play at Connecticut. Missouri. I thought we had this conversation.
Man, they gave up 35 points a game at conference play last year.
Oh, my gosh. But seriously, though, Missouri. I thought we had this conversation. You're in the SEC now. We do not go to Connecticut. We don't go to – it's not a basketball game, okay? It's a football game. We don't go to Connecticut to play a tackle football game in the SEC. You got to get past this. You don't want to say, well, we needed that big check that Connecticut was going to write us. That should never be something. That should never be a thing. We needed that UConn football money. That's what our program needed to thrive was that UConn football cash windfall. No. UConn's football stadium, Van does not actually know this. He's totally making it up just out of a general inference. There, UConn's football stadium has four seats in it, John. Four. One in each direction.
That's not big.
If you take your wife and kids, you each sit in a different grandstand. They've got four seats in that state. How do you get UConn football money to the SEC? How does that – I'm apoplectic about it. All right.
All right. Now that you know your rant, can I talk about this for a second?
Please.
I mean, I think we're seeing this a lot more now. I mean, you see Kentucky and going to Southern Miss, and I think you're seeing it with other schools – and I think what's happening is that the market rate for a home non-conference game has gone up and up and up and up. And schools that don't have the resources of a, you know, Auburn or Alabama or Florida or Michigan or whatever are going to have to do these kind of things where they do like a 2 or 3 for 1, where they get 2 or 3 home games in exchange for one game. of going to their stadium to lower the price of the home games that they're getting. Where they're, you know, otherwise it's it becomes a real budget issue for some of these schools.
Hmm. I can't imagine any circumstances where we would go play at Connecticut.
It's a $2 million.
Yeah.
You get to write the check?
Each person in that stadium contributes $500,000.
I'm just saying.
I'm just trying to imagine. You're up there. You're a UConn fan. You're like, oh, who's on our schedule this year? Oh, we're playing, you know, we're probably playing. Does Seton Hall even have a football team? I mean, we're playing, you know, the Maine Lobsters, you know.
Black Bears.
Yeah. And then you're playing the Fighting Stephen Kings. And then you're playing Missouri. And you're like, oh, Southeast Missouri? No. Oh, Missouri State? No. Missouri Tech? No. Missouri Polytechnic Institute? No. Northeastern Missouri Trade School for the Blind? No, Missouri. They're coming to our stadium. And I'd be like, SEC, man, they must be on hard times down there.
No, it's SEC. This is the Rhett Lashley revenge. Rhett Lashley, Eddie Graham coaching matchup.
Oh, nice. I like that. But I you have to do air quotes when you if Missouri is going to UConn, I have to do air quotes and go SEC with air quotes. All right. Anyway, I've got Missouri going 5-7. I think they can win. I think they'll lose to South Carolina, Auburn, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Arkansas, and maybe Kentucky. So 5-7. What do you think?
I think, yeah, 4-8, 5-7.
Okay.
I mean, maybe they beat Arkansas and lose another game in the East.
Man,
they won two conference games last year. I think that's about right. They could win the other non-conference games besides UConn or Missouri State, Purdue, and Idaho.
Right.
So, I mean, if they sweep their non-conference games and win two conference games, they go 6-6.
Wow.
So I think that's really possible. But they could, the defense could still be really crappy, and they could make a mistake or two and go 5-7.
Who was their fourth out of conference? Let me click back over to your thing.
Missouri State, Purdue, yeah. Idaho, and at UConn.
They should sweep those four, surely.
I agree. It's tied with Kentucky for the easiest schedule and the because they play us, but they play at Arkansas, and they could, I mean, at Arkansas is a toss up game.
Yeah, well, it's in Arkansas, so
yeah,
it's in the smokehouse. So, all right, well, let's move along. I'm not even bothered.
The house that Bert built.
Well, no, the house that other people built and Bert hasn't destroyed yet. But you know, this day's still young. Let's go ahead and look at the Fighting Chicken Fingers from South Carolina. South Carolina is another, like Kentucky, of these media darling dark horses, right? I mean, like, I haven't heard this week's show from Barrett Salee, but it seems like every week he promotes them a little higher and a little higher. I think he may have them winning the national championship by now. I'm not sure yet. And so I'm buying a little bit of the hype because they have had a better offense, even though their coach is Will Muschamp. They have had a better offense. They're going to have a pretty good defense. South Carolina could be one of the more improved teams in the league this season. Let me just tell you, you know, last season they finished 6-7, but their losses were at Kentucky, Texas A&M, Georgia, at Florida, and at Clemson. So they lost six in the regular season. No. Oh, South Florida. So how did they lose to South Florida in overtime? I don't even remember that game, but
it's the bowl game.
They could beat Kentucky this year. They could beat Texas A&M this year. They could beat Georgia, and they're famous for beating Georgia. They could beat Florida, and they're not going to beat Clemson. So, 1, 2, 3.
And they play 4, NC State 5. In the opener. It's Charlotte, neutral site game. That's a toss-up kind of game.
Well, they won seven games last year, and the magazine says they were 6-7. I'm trying to figure out how that works out.
I think they were 6-6 and lost the bowl game.
No, Oh, they beat Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, East Carolina, UMass, Tennessee, Missouri, West Carolina. That's seven games. That's seven wins. They went 7-5, and they lost their bowl game to finish 7-6. So the magazine's wrong.
They went 6-7. They went 6-6 and lost the bowl game.
Well, who did they lose to? Vanderbilt?
Kentucky.
Yeah. Texas A&M.
Mississippi State, Kentucky, A&M, Georgia.
Oh, wait. They lost
Florida
to
Florida and Clemson.
Did they lose to Mississippi State?
Yes.
This has them beating Mississippi State, see? There's the problem. All right, let me mark that. So they could win. They don't play Mississippi State this year, and their non-conference schedule is NC State in Charlotte, Louisiana Tech, Wofford, and then Clemson. So they could go 3-1 with their non-conference schedule.
And NC State is no pushover.
No, I know.
That's not a gimme.
It's a neutral site game. That needs to be a Thursday night game. I don't know if it is or not, but South Carolina is one of those teams that's supposed to play on Thursday night before Dragon Con.
I don't think so. I think this is on Saturday.
Well, dang it. Well, anyways, I've got South Carolina 9-3, John.
Wow. Look at you. The hype chickens.
9-3. Yeah, that chicken's getting tough. I got them beating NC State, Missouri, Kentucky, La Tech, Texas A&M, Arkansas. In fact, they're going to lose to Clemson. They're going to lose maybe to Georgia. And the only other game I have them losing is either Florida or Tennessee.
Wow.
So
you might have them winning the East.
Yeah.
I can't go there.
All right. Well, how do you see them?
They're better. I mean, and they return a lot of guys on offense. I like the young quarterback Bentley, and they have some other good skill position guys. They weren't that great on defense, even though I like Muschamp and Tavarius Robinson a lot. And they have the toughest schedule in the East by far. I mean, they have two really tough non-conference games. They got to go to A&M. Let me check their East
games.
I
know that in a way that seems hard, but I look at that schedule, and honestly, another way, it stacks up pretty nice. I mean, you start out with a mediocre NC State. Then you get on the road, but at Missouri, who's not going to be that great. You go home and play Kentucky, who's Kentucky. Then you got a break with Louisiana Tech before you go to A&M, who are no world beaters even at home, as we know. You got Arkansas at home. You go to Tennessee, but they're not great. You got Vanderbilt at home. Then you go to Georgia. You got Florida at home. Then you get Wofford before Clemson. So that's, I mean, if you had to play that schedule, that stacks up about as nice as you could ask, doesn't it?
Yeah, but to me, the teams that are the toss-up kind of games, like the Tennessee-Georgia games, are on the, you know, are away.
They are away, yeah.
That's my thing, is like that if those games, if it was reversed and those games are at home and they were going like to Vanderbilt or whatever and to Kentucky,
yeah,
then I might feel better about them. But I think I could see them losing both, you know, Tennessee and Georgia and the two non-conference games, and maybe A&M, and it's going like 7-5.
We got another. We don't have another 8-4, do we? The whole East is going to be 8-4 except Missouri.
No. I think I see 7-5 here.
Okay, it'll be interesting. We'll see. Let's see. Two more to go. The Tennessee Volunteers. Tennessee Volunteers. Now they are a real mystery this year because, you know, what their record has been the last few years. They've been getting steadily better, but never quite over the proverbial hump. They are a team that should have been in Atlanta a couple of times, but they let Florida and Georgia Georgia didn't go, but Georgia did them in if it wasn't Florida. Well, this year, they've got as tough of a schedule as anybody. I mean, because they always got to play Alabama, and they're at Alabama. They open at Georgia Tech in the Falcons' new big Mercedes-Benz Stadium during Dragon Con weekend. I'll be down there among the Tennessee and Georgia Tech fans, yay. How do they get Georgia Tech to play a neutral site game in their home city?
It's like the part two of the Chick-fil-A kickoff weekend game. They have Alabama, yeah, Florida State first, and then this is like the second game.
Why isn't this the first one, by the way? Are they both on the same day?
No, I think this one is
Sunday
or Monday. I'll double check. Keep going.
That's like if Auburn had Notre Dame come down and they're like, we'll play a neutral site game. Notre Dame's like, oh, okay, where do you want to play it? Atlanta or Houston?
It is the Monday night game.
Okay. So Notre Dame's like, where do you want to play it? Atlanta or Houston? Auburn's like, no, we'll play it in Jordan-Hare. But it's a neutral site game, see? It's not a home game for us. What is the world? I mean, I know they're not playing it in Georgia Tech's stadium, but still, it's like I've walked between those two points easily from North Avenue to the Midtown area where the Dome is. I just drove by the new stadium, by the way. It's an imposing structure. It's big. So I look at Tennessee, and I honestly just don't know what to make of them. They're going to be breaking in a new quarterback, right? They're
Dobbs is gone.
What they did have graduated, more or less. So who knows? I mean, what do you make of what Tennessee's going to have this year? I can't figure them out.
Well, I mean, they lost Dobbs. They lost their two running backs, Kamara and Hurd.
Yeah.
They lost their all-world defensive end, Derek Barnett. So what do they have coming back? A lot of offensive linemen, a lot of offensive line experience, and some experience on defense. Like you said, the schedule is kind of tough, but not too tough. They won nine games last year, but they should have won, 10 or 11, honestly.
Right.
And they should have won the East. Last year was their year, but they screwed around a couple games and lost when they shouldn't have. I think they're going to be competitive again. I hate to pick them as an 8-4 kind of team, but I think the new quarterback play will kind of mess them up. And I could see them going kind of. They've kind of, like you said, they've steadily improved, but I don't see them with the new quarterback and the shakiness they have on defense winning the East. So I see them taking a step back to like 7-5, a step behind Georgia, Florida.
I have Tennessee going 7-5 as well, a step behind the others. That is correct. we'll see if they can. I mean, they're in that little mix, but I don't think they're going to have the guns to. I am intrigued by the idea that they've really boosted their strength and conditioning program. I was reading where they went out and got an NFL guy to get them in better shape because they felt like they were just in flabby shape compared to other teams.
Yeah, I believe when I see it. To me, a bigger thing is their offensive coordinator I thought wasn't very good, and they brought in a new guy. So that could really help. And they've recruited pretty well. They have some talent. But the other part is like from the West, they get, like you said, they go to Bama and they get LSU at home. Georgia Tech is not a fun team to play. So there's no telling how that's going to end. And a lot of their tough, they go to Florida. They go to Kentucky the week after they play Alabama.
Yeah,
that's like warning, So, and then they get like LSU in between a road trip to Missouri and a home game against Vanderbilt. Like they could really beat them up, and then Vanderbilt could screw it up again. So
Tennessee LSU is always an interesting matchup because they don't play all that often. It's weird. There's certain matchups around the SEC that are just strange. You just don't see them very often, even if they've teams that have been in since we were 10, And Tennessee LSU is one of those games that is just not played very often, but when it is played, it usually is kind of a weird thing. It's not quite as weird as when we play LSU, but it still had its quirks. There have been some games that ended almost as weird as the Auburn LSU games have ended. It's funny, there's a lot of series like that, like Florida Mississippi State, you just don't see very often, or Missouri Auburn, honestly. But But yeah, that one is going to be interesting. It's weird just for them to plop LSU down at the end of their, because you know Tennessee is, we've talked about this many times, that Tennessee's schedule is infamously front loaded. You know, they, whatever Tennessee's record is, usually about 2/3 of the way through, go ahead and tack 4 more wins on, and that's what they're going to finish, because they, you know, used to finish with an out of conference team, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, you know. But not this year. Kentucky's better. Southern Miss. They're at Missouri, and then LSU before Vandy. So they got a little more, just a slightly more challenging finish.
That's a good point. Where a lot of years they were kind of, they'd be 500 in the middle of the year, and then they go 4-0 down the stretch or something. I don't see that happening this year.
Right. Yeah, they're like on the golf course where the last 4 holes are putt-putt holes. You know, after they've done their, you know, so. Not the case this year with Tennessee. So yeah, I've got them at 7-5, and then of course we end up. Get out your encyclopedias and turn to the V section for Vanderbilt. The Commodores. They play. I was just curious because I was thinking there's probably some unwritten rule. You know, there's a rule that SEC teams have to make one of their non-conference teams a legit team now. Which is how we ended up playing freaking Clemson all the time. I figured there was probably an unwritten codicil to that rule that says, unless you're Vanderbilt, in which case you can count Louisiana Monroe as your legit out-of-conference team, right? Or Wake Forest. I mean, that's what Vanderbilt traditionally does, is they'll play like 3 absolute cupcakes and their legit out-of-conference team will be Wake Forest or Harvard. Or UConn.
But this year, Kansas State.
Kansas State, the coach. The coach is coming. Well, it's looking like I'm going to be traveling down to Nashville to visit the Commodores. I used to hang out and sip mint juleps with Commodore Vanderbilt on the front steps of his mansion. And the little covered wagons would roll up. And I'd say, Commodore, let's get on your boat and float out in the water a little bit. Who am I? Why am I here? I forget. Stop this music. Stop it now, I say. Cut all this out. This shenanigans. All right. Sometimes the coach just wanders in his slippers and has a few words for us and then he leaves. So what do you make of Vanderbilt? Do they have a chance to do something special again this year, or are they going right back to their traditional role?
No, I mean, I think they have a chance to be a 500 bowl kind of team. They have better talent. They have good coaching. Mason's done a good job there. You know, other than Kansas State, Kansas State's at home, so that's a maybe they could win that game. The other 3 teams are non-conference games are wins. And from the West, they get Bama, and they have to go to Ole Miss, so I don't like either one of those. And their way their schedule lines up, I don't like it at all. Are you ready for this? Listen to this. Mm-hmm. Starting in mid-September, Kansas State home, mm-hmm. Alabama home, mm-hmm. at Florida, Georgia home, at Ole Miss, at South Carolina. So that's like the middle stretch of the season. I don't like it.
Not only that, John, I got them potentially losing to Western Kentucky.
Western Kentucky's good. That's They're right. dangerous. So, they won 3 conference games last year, and that was big. And, they got Ralph Webb, but they had the fewest offensive line starters returning, and the schedule was very tough. So I think it's 6-6 at best. Is kind of what I'm looking at for them.
I'm looking at Vanderbilt going 4-8. I hate it.
Wow.
But I got them back to the old days. Back to the old ways.
Yeah, I'm saying 3 non-conference wins, and didn't 3 wins would be tough. Maybe Ole Miss collapses, they beat them and 2 teams from the East, but probably more likely 5-7 or 4-8. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. So who do we have winning the SEC East then? You have everybody except Vanderbilt going 8-4, which is remarkable mathematically. I've got Georgia and South Carolina a game ahead of Florida. But again, like I said, to me it comes down to Florida, Georgia, South Carolina round robin. It's almost like if it was a World Cup group and you had Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and whoever, Missouri in there. and they're going to beat each other up and each get 3 points out of it. And it's like, who can accumulate the most points out of that little grouping? So I feel like the winner of the Georgia-South Carolina game is in the driver's seat in the East. And then if logic imposes itself, that'll be Georgia, even though South Carolina often wins that matchup. So I'm going to say Georgia wins the East. How do you see it playing out?
I think you see it coming down to the Georgia-Florida game, and my dark horse is Kentucky.
Now, see, you're going to ridicule me for picking South Carolina to be in the mix, and then you're going to go Kentucky.
Yes.
Sucky Kentucky.
Sucky Kentucky.
Well, well.
No, but I mean, Florida with a good QB, again, their schedule's tough. That's the one problem with them. But Kentucky's got the easy schedule, and they have some talent and experience coming back. And they could be, I think they could really benefit from the other teams knocking each other off and playing tougher schedules.
Well, that was the East, and it was about as exciting as you thought it would be, folks. But now, John,
it's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Mira doesn't sound like that anymore. I got to update it. I played it for the other day, and she went, I was little. So I got to update the Mira stuff. What do we got from our listener questions this week?
All right. First question comes from email at auwishbone@gmail.com.
So it's just auwishbone@gmail.com. Yeah. If you want to email a question,
it's from Theodore G. Roosevelt, who says, it seems to me that Auburn is never discussed in the media, such as ESPN, SEC Network, etc. Why do you think that is?
Well, part of it is that the people that do that, we learned this a couple of years ago. Remember, the people that do that for ESPN are Alabama people. So they intentionally snub us. That's why there's never any Auburn players on any of the ESPN ads. They never use Aubie. They never use Auburn players. They still haven't done my Heisman House ad. Well, that's at Nissan, right? But I still, my Heisman House ad where Bo and Pat and Cam are all sitting outside. What's his name? The stupid running back from 2009, Ingram. Mark Ingram is like, hey, there's no toilet paper, and it's all in the trees over their heads. But yeah, that's part of it. Why else is it, John?
Honestly, I've tuned a lot of those networks out, like the talking head pieces of those networks to a large extent.
Yep.
So I can't even answer this question.
Yeah.
I think my expectation is that the answer to this kind of thing is always they have some kind of, it's ratings and they've got some angle in the numbers they're trying to manipulate to get the ratings, and that's what they're doing. So,
well, I honestly think a lot of it is just bias towards your own team. I mean, if we were Missouri,
it's perception.
If we were Missouri fans, would we be saying, oh, well, man, we got it good as Missouri fans. Missouri's all over the media, man. Like, Auburn gets snubbed, but, man, Missouri, you can't turn a TV on without seeing Missouri. No. No. That's not what would happen. We'd be like, oh, man, why do they hate Missouri? So, I mean, who gets a lot of attention? Alabama, Texas, USC?
Alabama, Michigan. Texas with Tom Herman now, Ohio State, Michigan. Yeah. Michigan with Harbaugh gets a ton of attention.
That's about it.
Penn State this year gets more. And then Southern Cal with that team coming back, Sam Darnold.
Oregon when they were flashy, but even them not as much anymore. That's about it.
All right, we got a lot more questions. You ready?
Let's go.
Next question comes from your friend, my friend, Jared Albrecht.
Jared!
He says, what's the best stadium food for an Auburn game? I'm partial to Dreamland nachos or a turkey leg, but what do you like?
I just don't really eat food in football stadiums. I just don't. I don't like hot dogs. I can't eat pizza that I don't make myself or my wife make. I like the lemonade. Yeah. The frozen lemonade is my thing.
No, I'm about there too. I don't eat real food in the stadium at any college football game.
Nope.
Just about. So it's a bad answer, but
that's the truth for us. I mean, that's our truth. We have our truth.
And he has another question. I'm gonna send you offline, and we're gonna come back to it because it's gonna take you some thinking.
All right.
Next question comes from, you may have heard of this person, Ken Ringer.
I've heard of
who
him.
Who says, who's going to be the punter? Is it going to be Ian Shannon, or will it be your kicking machine?
Well, there's a walk-on out there now, too, that's apparently in the mix.
Yes, you're right. But I think a lot of people, our pressure's on Shannon. I mean, he's on scholarship.
He's the guy.
We don't want Carlson to be the kicker.
So no, in
the
fact,
punter, I meant.
That was one thing that Gus did mention at his press conference today, was the idea of having Carlson do punts as well as field goals and having somebody else do the kickoffs. Do we want that? I mean, the idea is to save his leg, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't want him overworking. I don't want him punting and kicking.
But I'm just saying, do we want somebody other than Carlson doing the kickoffs?
If they can kick it out of the end zone, yes. But to me, he's a real weapon on kickoffs.
Right.
But it's a question of, he has to be better than the other guy, really better than the other guy as a punter.
I would think. I mean, how bad can Shannon be? Is he like kicking it backwards?
I don't know.
Is he kicking it? It goes over his head and behind him. I mean, what? How bad can you do? You have to be to that they have to endanger everything else about our kicking game just because you suck that bad as a punter? I can't imagine that that's right. I mean, I can't imagine that he's that bad.
Yeah, I think it's like, maybe it's like the QB battle. Yeah. They have an idea what they want to happen. They just got to see it happen.
All right.
Our next question comes from Josh, who's at the Blipster, who says, ESPN has Jared Stidham as the 22nd best college football player in the entire country.
Woohoo!
Ahead of guys on their list like Jalen Hurts and Nick Chubb. When will Auburn name him the starting quarterback?
It's just, that says it all. When will he be named the starting quarterback since he's clearly one of the 20 best players? Slow your roll, world. It'll get there when it gets there. I mean, I'm not thinking he's going to go the Jeremy Johnson route, but it's just too early to slap the belt on him. He hadn't even gotten in the ring yet, you know?
I'm agreeing with you, but – and they're not going to – like you said at the beginning, there's to be the perception of competition. We're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
All right. Jacob Fleming asks, how big a role do you think Byron Cowart and Jeff Holland will have on this year's defense?
I think that Jeff Holland's going to have a very big role on this year's defense, and I think Byron Cowart may never see the field.
I think Cowart's going to play because we're going to need him to be we're going to need the second and third team defensive tackles. That's what he's going to be in some of these games. And so he's going to get out there, but it may be 10 plays a game. Tops. In terms of Holland, I think it's between him and Paul James III for the you know, Carlson's Lawson's old position, the buck position, the pass rusher, and so I think I like Paul James III, and I think Holland. I think a lot of times rush is kind of out of control, and he has the speed, the athletic ability, but a lot of times he just runs by people. So I expect Paul James III to beat him out. But I think he's going to play a lot, especially on third down and that kind of stuff. And he's going to play a lot. So
when we signed Cowart, did you envision yourself 3 years later saying, man, I sure am glad we've got him because we need a second or third string defensive tackle?
Nope.
Man.
That's a tough one. All right, Dan in North Carolina says, your ranking of what Auburn games are you most excited to watch in the first half of the season?
Ooh, that's a very interesting question.
It's a good question. I got to look.
I'm looking. Let's go to the schedule.
Number one, you're going to pick Missouri, but number one to me has got to be at Clemson in the first half of the season.
Well, I mean, where the crap – I'm trying to find the West. Well, the only reason I say Missouri is because I'm so excited to actually get to go to an Auburn game and not have to drive very far. But it's an interesting question just because the first half of the schedule doesn't include Georgia and Alabama or even Texas A&M or this year LSU. And by the way, John, I was just mentioning this on Twitter, and not to be a killjoy or rain on anybody's parade, but do you realize that when the month of September ends this year, five of our games will already be over. We'll be one game away from the midpoint of the season by the end of September. Mm. That's that's crazy. But we only play three in October. So here's the first six, okay? Because LSU's not even in the first half this time. Georgia Southern, Clemson, Mercer, Missouri, Mississippi State, Ole Miss. Well, it's got to be Clemson, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the two Mississippis, who cares? And at Missouri, obviously, just for me, but, I mean, that's just because I'm getting to watch it in person. But, yeah, Clemson, we could very easily start this season 6-0 or 5-1 before we play anybody tougher than you know, other than Clemson, tougher than Ole Miss or Mississippi State. So,
I think that's right. I mean, I think Clemson game's a huge game. They lost a ton. And I think we're better, and I think it's going to be a good game. So I'm picking that one.
Man, meanwhile, the second half of the season is at LSU, at Arkansas, at A&M, Georgia, Louisiana Monroe, Alabama. It's a tale of two halves, isn't it?
It is, but I think that what we need to be – this is something that, you know, in terms of like you thinking about the not playing Petway, Kerryon Johnson in the script in the scrimmage today. We need to be healthy and rolling when we come out of that Ole Miss game.
Yes.
We have to be, you know, the offense needs to be clicking, the defense needs to be confident, because we go into that three-game road stretch and then come and play Georgia, we have to be playing very well.
Yep.
All right, next question comes from G.C. Gaston, one who's Alabama Mississippi dirt lawyer on Twitter.
Yes.
And he says, how much run-pass option and fast pace will the offense use this season? Can staff resist the temptation to substitute players each play?
The jury is out because we don't know Lindsey well enough, and we don't know what Gus is going to do. Like, is Gus suddenly going to be the Chizik of the relationship with his foot on the brakes after all the time he chafed under Chizik's foot on the brakes? It's going to be interesting when the foot's on the other brake, or the different foot's on, you know what I'm saying, anyway. Hey, somebody's foot's on somebody's brake. So we just don't know enough yet about Lindsey and what he's going to do with these particular players, with this particular head coach. And it's going to be very interesting to watch how that plays out. I'm curious to see how fast we go against Georgia Southern, because we don't have to go fast against Georgia Southern. So think about this. If we go fast against Georgia Southern in that opening game, that means that's what we're wanting to do, even though we don't have to. You know, that means that's kind of going to be our personality. If we slow down against Georgia Southern, then we're going to be variable again, and variable tends to trend towards slow.
I'd agree with that. And I think part of it, and he makes this point in another tweet, a follow-up tweet, a lot of the substitution pattern is kind of, Gus has this kind of high school coach mentality where he wants everybody to play instead of getting the best guys on the field and just running the, you know, really off running, calling the plays and keeping them out there.
Yeah.
And so I think the substitution was a little bit kind of overcoaching. We talked about that a lot last year. But so I think there's going to be less of that and more just calling the plays and run them out there.
I think that's pretty good.
All right. Emily Rios asked, she'd like to know our thoughts on the scrimmage. Should we be concerned that the defense won?
Well, don't we generally say we always want the defense to win?
Well, I mean, I think early in fall practice, it's not surprising at all that the defense wins the scrimmage, especially, you know, a lot of return. I think our defense is going to be really, really, really good. And, you know, we have a lot of returning starters. It's the second year for them under Steele, and it's the first year under Lindsey, so they're still kind of learning Lindsey stuff. And I'm not shocked at all the defense won. And that, especially without Kerryon and Petway playing for the offense. I mean, if they didn't play in a game and our offense played our defense, I'd pick our defense too. So, that doesn't shock me.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Rusty Owens says, do you think Gus will really open the offense and let the running backs catch the ball on a regular basis?
Oh, yeah. I fully expect a lot more passing. Maybe I'm living in a fool's paradise, you know, but I really honestly do think that we're going to see a lot more passing, and I think that the receivers are going to surprise a lot, not everybody, but a lot of people. I have a lot more to say about that in 2 weeks.
I'm with you. I'll hold my comment, a lot of my analysis piece for 2 weeks from now, but I agree 100%. I think the running backs are going to catch the ball a lot more. I think we're going to throw the ball more, and I think the running backs are going to catch the ball a lot more, especially carry on. I look for him to have a big year catching the ball.
I just want to see Petway swing out in the flat on the wheel route and catch the ball and then look up and there's a cornerback and that cornerback is in the process of wetting his pants.
That's it.
I just want to see that so bad.
And I say you.
That's what he's going to see coming. Any other questions?
I think that's it.
All right. Ooh, well, if you want to contact us, you can always tweet at AU Wishbone or at JK Ringer or at me, and we'll get it to the right person. John kind of wrangles the questions for us every episode. Of course, if you're not on the Twitter and you're listening and you want to contact us, you can just email auwishbone@gmail.com, and we occasionally check in on that too. You can also, as Maddie will mention in a minute, you can also find the show on Facebook. Just look for AU Wishbone on Facebook. I haven't posted much there lately because it wasn't getting a whole lot of... We have like 500 or 600 people that have liked our Facebook page on the Wishbone, but it's just not like an active forum, so I don't have a lot of incentive to go there and post stuff. But, you know, anybody out there that listens that wants to like the page can come and post stuff, ask questions there and everything, and I'll see the... I'll see the notification and I can go check it out. So by all means, visit the Facebook page too. Any last thoughts about the SEC East or Auburn or our scrimmage or anything like that?
No, I mean, I'm excited that we're back to talking about real football notes and not off-season stuff. And I'm looking at the East teams and going through it. I was not overly impressed. I think the East is going to be better. As a whole, maybe solid, but there's no great teams in the East.
Yeah, I look at the SEC East, and all I can say is...
Please clap.
All right, let's get on out of here for another week. We'll be back on the AU Wishbone in 2 weeks to do the big SEC West barbecue preview and talk about Auburn. That'll be a good, long, big show. Join us next week for our, I believe we have our big Game of Thrones nearly the end of the season extravaganza.
Yes.
So we'll be covering, I guess, the 3 episodes for that show. I know a lot of our listeners are also big fans of that show and like to listen to us talk about Game of Thrones, and we'll be overdoing that. So for all those kind of shows, visit whiterocket.podbean.com or go on iTunes and search White Rocket. I believe, by the way, if you don't know and it's more convenient for you, you can now find this show, the AU Wishbone, on Google Play, as well as the usual locations such as iTunes, the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and the War Eagle Reader. So,
One more thing.
Yes.
I apologize, I forgot this. There was a lot of follow-up people that really enjoyed your Gerald Stidham jokes in the last podcast and about how he's Jared's evil twin, maybe. So that may be something like something we bring up throughout the season when Jared does something bad. We could say that was Gerald out there.
Got to come up with a sound effect for Gerald now. All right. Let's keep that in mind. All right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. John, War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of?
So we'll see what happens. All right.
I'm not saying anything.
Say nothing. All right. Good night.
Night, man.
Take it easy. Whatever you're doing, stop it. Go to bed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.